Chapter 46. Kaiser, having received the letter about the 11th hour of the day, immediately sends a messenger to the Belovaki, to M. Crassus, questor there, whose winter quarters were 25 miles distant from him. He orders the legion to set forward in the middle of the night and come to him with dispatch. Crassus set out with the messenger. He sends another to see Fabius, the lieutenant, ordering him to lead forth his legion into the territories of the Atrebates, to which he knew his march must be made. He writes to Labienus to come with his legion to the frontiers of the Nervi, if he could do so to the advantage of the Commonwealth. He does not consider that the remaining portion of the army, because it was somewhat farther distant, should be waited for, but assembles about 400 horse from the nearest winter quarters. Chapter 47. Having been apprised of the arrival of Crassus by the scouts at about the third hour, he advances 20 miles that day. He appoints Crassus over Semerobriva and assigns him a legion, because he was leaving there the baggage of the army, the hostages of the states, the public documents, and all the corn, which he had conveyed thither for passing the winter. Fabius, without delaying a moment, meets him on the march with his legion as he had been commanded. Labienus, having learnt the death of Sabinus and the destruction of the cohorts, as all the forces of the Treviri had come against him, beginning to fear lest, if he made a departure from his winter quarters, resembling a flight, he should not be able to support the attack of the enemy, particularly since he knew them to be elated by their recent victory, sends a letter back to Kaiser informing him with what great hazard he would lead out his legion from winter quarters. He relates at large the affair which had taken place among the Eburones. He informs him that all the infantry and cavalry of the Treviri had encamped at a distance of only 3 miles from his own camp. Chapter 48. Kaiser, approving of his motives, although he was disappointed in the expectation of 3 legions and reduced to 2, yet placed his only hopes of the common safety in dispatch. He goes into the territories of the Nervi by long marches. There he learns from some prisoners what things are going on in the camp of Cicero, and in how great jeopardy the affair is. Then, with great rewards, he induces a certain man of the Gallic horse to convey a letter to Cicero. This he sends written in Greek characters, lest the letter being intercepted, our measures should be discovered by the enemy. He directs him, if he should be unable to enter, to throw his spear with the letter fastened to the thong inside the fortifications of the camp. He writes in the letter that he, having set out with his legions, will quickly be there. He entreats him to maintain his ancient valor. The Gaul, apprehending danger, throws his spear as he had been directed. It by chance struck into a tower, and, not being observed by our men for 2 days, was seen by a certain soldier on the 3rd day. When taken down, it was carried to Cicero. He, after perusing it, reads it out in an assembly of the soldiers, and fills all with the greatest joy. Then the smoke of the fires was seen in the distance, a circumstance which banished all doubt of the arrival of the legions. Chapter 49. The Gauls, having discovered the matter through their scouts, abandoned the blockade and marched towards Kaiser with all their forces. These were about 60,000 armed men. Cicero, an opportunity now being afforded, again begs of that Vertigo the Gaul whom we mentioned above to convey back a letter to Kaiser. He advises him to perform his journey warily. He writes in the letter that the enemy had departed and had turned their entire force against him. When this letter is brought to him about the middle of the night, Kaiser apprises his soldier of its contents, and inspires them with courage for fighting. The following day, at the dawn, he moves his camp, and, having proceeded 4 miles, he espies the forces of the enemy on the other side of a considerable valley and rivulet. It was an affair of great danger to fight with such large forces in a disadvantageous situation. For the present, therefore, inasmuch as he knew that Cicero was released from the blockade, and thought that he might, on that account, relax his speed, he halted there and fortifies a camp in the most favorable position he can. And this, though it was small in itself, there being scarcely 7,000 men, and these two without baggage, still, by the narrowness of the passages, he contracts as much as he can, with this object, that he may come into the greatest contempt with the enemy. In the meanwhile, scouts having been sent in all directions, he examines by what most convenient path he might cross the valley. Chapter 50. That day, slight skirmishes of cavalry having taken place near the river, both armies kept in their own positions. The Gauls, because they were awaiting larger forces which had not yet then arrived. Caesar, to see if perchance by pretense of fear he could allure the enemy towards his position, so that he might engage in battle in front of his camp on this side of the valley. If he could not accomplish this, that, having inquired about the passes, he might cross the valley and the river with the less hazard. At daybreak, the cavalry of the enemy approaches to the camp and joins battle with our horse. Caesar orders the horse to give way purposely and retreat to the camp. At the same time, he orders the camp to be fortified with a higher rampart in all directions, the gates to be barricaded, and in executing these things, as much confusion to be shown as possible, and to perform them under the pretense of fear. Chapter 51. Induced by all these things, the enemy lead over their forces and draw up their line in a disadvantageous position. And, as our men also had been led down from the ramparts, they approach nearer and throw their weapons into the fortification from all sides, and sending heralds round, order it to be proclaimed, that if any, either Gaul or Roman, was willing to go over to them before the third hour, it was permitted. After that time, there would not be permission. And so much did they disregard our men, that the gates being blocked up with single rows of turf as a mere appearance, because they did not seem able to burst in that way, some began to pull down the rampart with their hands, others to fill up the trenches. Then Caesar, making a sally from all the gates and sending out the cavalry, soon puts the enemy to flight, so that no one at all stood his ground with the intention of fighting, and he slew a great number of them and deprived all of their arms. Chapter 52. Caesar, fearing to pursue them very far, because woods and morasses intervened, and also because he saw that they suffered no small loss in abandoning their position, reaches Cicero the same day with all his forces safe. He witnesses with surprise the towers, mantlets, and other fortifications belonging to the enemy. The legion having been drawn out, he finds that even every 10th soldier had not escaped without wounds. From all these things he judges with what danger and with what great courage matters have been conducted. He commends Cicero according to his desert, and likewise the legion. He addresses individually the centurions and the tribunes of the soldiers, whose valor he had discovered to have been signal. He receives information of the death of Sabinus and Cotta from the prisoners. An assembly being held the following day, he states the occurrence. He consoles and encourages the soldiers. He suggests that the disaster, which had been occasioned by the misconduct and rashness of his lieutenant, should be borne with a patient mind, because by the favor of the immortal gods and their own valor, neither was lasting joy left to the enemy, nor very lasting grief to them. Chapter 53. In the meanwhile, the report respecting the victory of Caesar is conveyed to Labienus through the country of the Remi with incredible speed, so that, though he was about 60 miles distant from the winter quarter of Cicero, and Caesar had arrived there after the 9th hour, before midnight a shout arose at the gates of the camp, by which shout an indication of the victory and a congratulation on the part of the Remi were given to Labienus. This report having been carried to the Treviri, Indutio Marus, who was resolved to attack the camp of Labienus the following day, flies by night and leads back all his forces into the country of the Treviri. Caesar sends back Fabius with his legion to his winter quarters. He himself determines to winter with 3 legions near Samarobriva in 3 different quarters, and, because such great commotions had arisen in Gaul, he resolved to remain during the whole winter with the army himself. For the disaster respecting the death of Sabinus having been circulated among them, almost all the states of Gaul were deliberating about war, sending messengers and embassies into all quarters, inquiring what further measure they should take, and holding councils by night in secluded places. Nor did any period of the whole winter pass over without fresh anxiety to Caesar, or without his receiving some intelligence respecting the meetings and commotions of the Gauls. Among these, he is informed by L. Roscius, the lieutenant whom he had placed over the 13th legion, that large forces of those states of the Gauls which are called the Armoricans had assembled for the purpose of attacking him, and were not more than 8 miles distant. But, intelligence respecting the victory of Kaiser being carried to them had retreated in such a manner that their departure appeared like a flight. Chapter 54. But Kaiser, having summoned to him the principal persons of each state, in one case by alarming them, since he declared that he knew what was going on, and in another case by encouraging them, retained a great part of Gaul in its allegiance. The Senones, however, which is a state eminently powerful and one of great influence among the Gauls, attempting by general design to slay Caurinus, whom Kaiser had created king among them, whose brother, Moritasgus, had held the sovereignty at the period of the arrival of Kaiser in Gaul, and whose ancestors had also previously held it, when he discovered their plot and fled, pursued him even to the frontiers of the state, and drove him from his kingdom and his home. And, after sending ambassadors to Kaiser for the purpose of concluding a peace, when he ordered all their senate to come to him, did not obey that command. So far did it operate among those barbarian people that there were found some to be the first to wage war, and so great a change of inclinations did it produce in all, that except the Aedui and the Remi, whom Kaiser had always held in especial honor, the one people for their long-standing and uniform fidelity towards the Roman people, the other for their late service in the Gallic War, there was scarcely a state which was not suspected by us. And I do not know whether that ought much to be wondered at, as well for several other reasons, as particularly because they who ranked above all nations for prowess in war most keenly regretted that they had lost so much of that reputation as to submit to commands from the Roman people. Chapter 55. But the Treveri and Indutiomarus led no part of the entire winter pass without sending ambassadors across the Rhine, importuning the states, promising money, and asserting that, as a large portion of our army had been cut off, a much smaller portion remained. However, none of the German states could be induced to cross the Rhine, since they had twice essayed it, they tried, in the war with Ariovistus, and in the passage of the Tencteri there, that fortune was not to be tempted any more. Indutiomarus, disappointed in this expectation, nevertheless began to raise troops, and discipline them, and procure horses from the neighboring people, and allure to him by great rewards the outlaws and convicts throughout Gaul. And such great influence had he already acquired for himself in Gaul by these means, that embassies were flocking to him in all directions, and seeking, publicly and privately, his favor and friendship. Chapter 56. When he perceived that they were coming to him involuntarily, that on the one side the Senones and the Carnutes were stimulated by their consciousness of guilt, on the other side the Nervi and the Aduatuci were preparing war against the Romans, and that forces of volunteers would not be wanting to him if he began to advance from his own territories, he proclaims an armed council. This, according to the custom of the Gauls, is the commencement of war, at which, by a common law, all the youths were wont to assemble in arms. Whoever of them comes last is killed in the sight of the whole assembly after being racked with every torture. In that council he declares Cingetorix, the leader of the other faction, his own son-in-law, whom we have above mentioned as having embraced the protection of Kaiser and never having deserted him, an enemy, and confiscates his property. When these things were finished, he asserts in the council that he, invited by the Senones and the Carnutes and several other states of Gaul, was about to march thither through the territories of the Remi, devastate their lands, and attack the camp of Labienus. Before he does that, he informs them of what he desires to be done. Chapter 57. Labienus, since he was confining himself within a camp strongly fortified by the nature of the ground and by art, had no apprehensions as to his own and the legion's danger, but was devising that he might throw away no opportunity of conducting the war successfully. Accordingly, the speech of Indutiomarus, which he had delivered in the council, having been made known to him by Cingetorix and his allies, he sends messengers to the neighboring states and summons horse from all quarters. He appoints to them a fixed day for assembling. In the meantime, Indutiomarus, with all his cavalry, nearly every day used to parade close to his, Labienus's, camp, at one time that he might inform himself of the situation of the camp, at another time for the purpose of conferring with or of intimidating him. The Bienus confined his men within the fortifications and promoted the enemy's belief of his fear by whatever methods he could. Chapter 58. Since Indutio Marius was daily advancing up to the camp with greater defiance, all the cavalry of the neighboring states which he, Labienus, had taken care to have sent for, having been admitted in one night, he confined all his men within the camp by guards with such great strictness that that fact could by no means be reported or carried to the Treveri. In the meanwhile, Indutio Marius, according to his daily practice, advances up to the camp and spends a great deal of the day there. His horse cast their weapons, and with very insulting language call our men out to battle. No reply being given by our men, the enemy, when they thought proper, depart towards evening in a disorderly and scattered manner. Labienus unexpectedly sends out all the cavalry by two gates. He gives this command and prohibition, that when the enemy should be terrified and put to flight, which he foresaw would happen, as it did, they should all make for Indutio Marius, and no one wound any man before he should have seen him slain, because he was unwilling that he should escape, in consequence of gaining time by the delay occasioned by the pursuit of the rest. He offers great rewards for those who should kill him. He sends up the cohorts as a relief to the horse. The issue justifies the policy of the man, and since all aimed at one, Indutio Marius is slain, having been overtaken at the very ford of the river, and his head is carried to the camp. The horse, when returning, pursue and slay all whom they can. This affair having been known, all the forces of the Eburones and the Nervi which had been assembled depart, and for a short time after this action, Kaiser was less harassed in the government of Gaul,